got a lot of information to get through and a short time to do it. Of course, I could just tell you where it is and we can go home. But that's not how I do things. All right, you should have your Bibles once again open to Romans chapter 12. We're looking at verses 3 through 16, and we're receiving as our instruction of wisdom via the godly love that is going to be developed in us. We're kind of looking at an outline, and we need now to come down to the final components of it and be able to determine where they are, especially from verses 13 through 16. Now, as I said at the end of our last lesson, there's several ways that we can know where to make the break, one being grammatical, one technical, and one contextual. On the grammatical side of things, just by looking at it, how many sentences do you have from here on out? All the way through, all the way to the end. You got six, right? Got a period at the end of... She put her glasses on. Now she's... You got... Let's count the periods. One, two, three, and then this verse has three, four, five, six. Got six periods. So even though the first period there is the end of one sentence, you've got basically six sentences. That's helpful. Right now, though, just kind of docket that in the back of your mind. I'll come back to that. But first of all, I want to kind of focus our attention on what I call the technical side of things, because this is going to be real important as we continue on. And what I mean again by that is that each and every packet, this big one here from verse 3 through 8, the littler ones of 9 and 10, of 11, of 12, every packet of doctrine that you're going to encounter and that is given to you by your Father is going, that goes to making up the whole form of doctrine that we're receiving from Him, which is our, of course, instruction of wisdom via godly love. When it comes to each component or packet, I call them sometimes packets of doctrine, within the overall form of doctrine, as it does its effectual job, it's going to produce that godly love in its most basic, fundamental way. Yet, even though it's basic and fundamental, it nevertheless is going to match exactly the basic, fundamental, godly love that exists in God our Father. But when it comes to the packets that make it all up, or the components to effectually work within our inner man and get the godly love produced, what you have to be able to, and I think this is important even for you, maybe not as important as it is for me, the one who's teaching it, but I think you need to know this, that it's critical for you to know it, and that is, how does it go about doing its job? How does it get godliness produced? How does it get if the effectual working going in us? And as you and I know, and we've already been talking, I've got it up here on this side, it does that by means of godly edifying. And it does it by means of what godly edifying calls for. And that is to change our thinking, first and foremost, and bring that thinking into line. We may have to have some thinking that's corrupted, completely changed, some completely thrown out. But it's going to first of all touch upon our thinking, and it brings that thinking into line with God's own thinking. And there's a process to this. By that thinking, in turn, it's going to affect the way we conduct ourselves, the way we behave ourselves, usually beginning very privately sometimes within just our own privacy and our own life, where we personally and maybe just us can see the conduct and behavior, or maybe just a few members, a limited few to those who immediately surround us can observe it. So then by that proper godly thinking and having it materially affect our living, there's where you go from thinking to living. Finally, the godly thinking along with the godly living comes along. Both of those combined go into practice in more than just our personal life, in more than just our private conduct and behavior, and it has some labor to do with it, and in connection with our Father, and some kind of an operation, or some kind of a vocational training while we're still on this earth that we have to be involved in. And that's going to translate into taking that vocational training, finally, off the practice field, And that's all we're on here on this earth. We're on the practice field, so to speak, and then utilize that training for our Father's business in that creature, with it and in it. Now, I know you know what I just said in the last 3 minutes. I know you know that. But I said it the way I did, really, so that what we're going to have to do before we actually begin verse 3 is add something to that. Because there's something that we now can add that you're not aware of, but as the one teaching this, I am aware of, just by nature of me teaching it. And I'm going to bring that to your attention because it's critical as we go through all the packets from here on out. And I don't mean from here on out from verse 3 down through verse 16. I mean from here on out through the remainder of the course of the education. But I say it that way so we can pick on that and pick it up and at another time. We won't get to it tonight, but definitely on Sunday, we'll be able to add something very critical to our understanding and appreciation of how godly edifying is supposed to take place. That's going to be go beyond us talking about thinking, living, and labor. And we'll do that when we begin to deal again more closely with the first component, beginning there in verse 3. But in order to get this final breakdown going here to the final two components to our instruction of wisdom in verses 13 through 16, the issue of how many sentences, going back to that grammatical issue, is nice to have that right there. It's elementary, but it's nice to see it. It's packaged up pretty well. The issue of how many sentences is viable to what we are going to do. And keeping in mind that godly edifying is supposed to take place in each component. So therefore, when we're reading down through this and we're kind of on the lookout, we're on the lookout for a pattern. And the pattern that we're dealing with is the thinking issue first, then the living issue second, and the labor issue third. Those two things, the two things being the grammar and the technical issue, those two things help us out in order to see where the break takes place. I haven't even talked about the context yet, but we're going to add to that the issue of the context, and that should nail it down really well, that we're going to find as we go down through the remainder of the verses. Well, just as we noticed a notable shift taking place after verse 11, from godly love being going out into our business world, but then suddenly we're back to dealing not with people anymore, but we're dealing with ourselves now in a reasonable and natural way and for a natural reason that occurs because the godly love has moved into the area of the local assembly and then out into the area of our business workaday life. That next natural reason is verse 12. So let's take notice and see that there's a shift that again takes place at verse 13 and following, or one that takes place between verses 12 and 13. And let's notice what that shift is, and then we'll see where that final shift, there'll be one more take place, and by doing that, that should give us the actual break of the components. Well, remember that the context of the fourth component, the instruction of wisdom, is shifted from, as I say, the godly love dealing with a whole bunch of people back to us as members of the new creature of the church, the body of Christ, and the circumstances that we have in the common circumstances, situations we find ourselves in as we encounter the sufferings of this present time. Beginning there in verse 13, though, he comes along and he says, distributing to the necessity of saints, given to hospitality. What are we back to? People. I don't know if you've ever seen the old John Wayne movie, McClintock, but I love Chill Wills in McClintock. People. And we're back to people. We're back to dealing with a whole bunch of people again. The first part of verse 10 has saints, plural, believers, people, in view. But the last part of 13, when it says, given to hospitality, doesn't necessarily have saints in view, although it certainly could include saints, right? But the indication would seem that it's not just saints in view, even though a particular thing is said about saints, and that is that we're to be distributing to the necessity of saints. So again, even in the last part of verse 13, we're still dealing with people. Even if it's not saints, or if it's kind of a combination of saints and not saints, we're still dealing with people in verse 13. And so in order to begin to give a name, in order to begin to kind of give a description to the components of this in its sense and sequence form of doctrine, the thing that when you hit verse 13 that distinguishes it from the previous four components isn't so much the people who are in view, but it's what the godly love is doing to the people. You're distributing to the necessity of some people, some saints. You're given to some hospitality. You're blessing them which persecute you and cursing them not. You're rejoicing with them that do rejoice, and you're weeping with them that weep. It's what the godly love is having you do to the people, you see? And again, it's that selflessness and that kindness of godly love that's behind all that's going on here. And even in connection with the saints here in verse 13, they're being treated in a different manner than what was spoken of them back in verses 3 through 8. In verses 3 through 8, this doesn't have you distributing to the necessity of saints. So, therefore, the godly love is returned to dealing with people, and now it's going to do more than what it's been doing with them already. For example, it's not just going to deal with saints in a way that provides for the local assembly, and it's not going to just deal with saints in a way that provides for them to be kindly treated and for brotherly love to be displayed. And for, I'm going to tip some things off here by saying this, but for the tightening up of the relationship that's supposed to be going on in the local assembly. Did I give something away there? Didn't give it away. Okay. I'm not even going to tell you. I'm not going to say any more about it then. I'll let it go. But the godly love is to move on to another area as well. So it says, distributing to the necessity of saints, given to hospitality. So now you've got saints that would have a necessity, that based upon the godly love and charity that you now have working in you, would have you distributing to that necessity. But also dealing with ones in that same verse in a particular way, and that particular way of showing hospitality to them. By the way, this is critical. And again, God teaches you deep and profound things with the simplest language in the world. There's a difference. Notice he doesn't say, distributing to the necessity of saints, being hospitable. That's not what he says. There's a reason why he doesn't say it that way. He says, given to it. Given to hospitality. That's different than just coming along saying, you know, you ought to be hospitable. Given to hospitality. That word, given to hospitality, actually tells me I may deal with saints, but I may not be dealing with saints either. If I'm given to hospitality, am I just going to treat saints hospitably? If I'm given to hospitality? No. I'm going to treat everybody that way, even if they're not saints. By the way, in case you've got a Catholic background that's just driving you crazy every time I say saints, I'm not talking about St. Paul and St. Thomas and St. Okay, I am a saint. You are a saint. Every believer is a saint, and they don't have to be canonized. In fact, there's probably, if my understanding is correct, there's some saints in the Roman Catholic Church that aren't even believers. I'm St. Mark. I always thought it'd be cool to be like Fred, St. Fred. St. Barney. Well, the issue, though, is being given to hospitality, and the way that's stated has more in mind than just other saints that you come into contact with. In other words, There's no qualification there that says that's only to be done to saved people. And what's going on here is that the next component to the doctrine of our godly love and the receiving of the wisdom comes along and extends that godly love. First to the saints, distributing the necessity of saints, and then to other people who are even in a lost condition, given to hospitality, bringing or leading your thinking. That phrase leads your thinking to include others who may not be saints. In other words, lost people as well. So not only are you dealing with a whole bunch of people, but you're dealing with saved people and lost people. And as we'll see, that word hospitality and that phrase given to hospitality, that has a trigger on it. There's a trigger mechanism to that. By that I mean it triggers some thinking that we previously had. And it causes your thinking, your godly thinking about this godly love that's been produced in you, to move out not only to saints and to think about them in a different way than you've thought about them before, but also to include folks who are not of the same variety as a saint is. And sure enough, if you keep on reading, verses 14 and 15 go on to describe some things in connection with those who are not necessarily saints or who are lost people. Bless them which persecute you. Bless and curse not. Rejoice with them that do rejoice, and weep with them that weep. And it describes godly love existing in some other particular ways and put on display in some other particular ways. And even though we'll get more understanding and appreciation of this when we deal with these passages in their full detail and get their full effectual working, right now you should be able to look at verses 14 and 15 and catch very easily one of the major byproducts. And that's just my term. A major byproduct, so to speak, that furthers the issue of godly love. I'm not looking at it as a major feature to it, but it is a major byproduct of it that God our Father wants produced in us in order to have it to be our wisdom before Him, and in order for it to be our wisdom in the eyes of the angels and in the eyes of men in general. So when you think about verses 14 and 15, bless them which persecute you, bless and curse not, rejoice with them that do rejoice, and weep with them that weep. See that? Notice, let your eye go down and just linger there in verses 14 and 15 for a moment. Bless them which persecute, bless and curse not, rejoice with them that do rejoice, and weep with them that weep. Think about that for a moment. When you think about what verses 14 and 15 say, what is it that could be called a descriptive term? It's not in the verses, but something that might describe attitude-wise what that's talking about, or how it's to be put on display, display-wise, in connection with both saints and lost people. And you need to kind of focus in upon those words, bless. By the way, bless doesn't mean you come along and say, bless you, my child, or whatever. What does bless mean? You speak well of them. You have bless, rejoice, weep. What is that all dealing with in regard to godly love? If you saw that in somebody, you would say, you know, that guy is really what? Huh? Empathy? Yeah. What? Compassionate? What was you saying? Tolerant? Tolerance? Those are all good. Charitable? That's very good. If you say, yeah, but it's not what you're after. That's okay. If that's what that will suffice, actually. I'll tell you what. To me, when you think about a person, man or woman, who can do that, and you're talking about somebody who can bless somebody who persecutes them, not curse them, rejoicing with them that rejoice and weeping with them that weep, I would look at that person, and one of the first things that would come to mind, I'd say, you know what? That guy is really tender-hearted. You know that that's a feature of your Father? He's tender-hearted. I know it's tough to think about if you read through the book of the Revelation. But he's also righteous and just. But he is, by nature, tender-hearted. Now, we're not going to use that as a major feature or anything. I'm just trying to get that across as a means to begin seeing groupings taking place here. But in regard to both saints as well as lost people, when you're going to deal with them in certain situations that are given to you here, you're supposed to deal with them tenderheartedly in the circumstances given here. That's not across the board in every circumstance that you'll ever encounter, but as you're taught about it right here. Well, if there's any fuzziness in your thinking right there, we'll get the fuzziness cleared, you know, as we go through it and be able to give more clarity to this. This is way even close. We're not even scratching the surface here. But we'll give more descriptive definition to it as a component as we deal with it. But context-wise, let's focus on that third issue. When you look at what gets said here, you know, we know that it sounds pretty good right now that we've got people being dealt with from verse. We're back to people. Something within the verses that kind of have us looking at this tender-hearted issue, and that maybe there's a shift that we can start seeing emerging through all of this that takes place once again. But let's focus on the context for a moment. And when you look at what gets said here in verse 16, be of the same mind one toward another, mind not high things. See how verse 16 down here? Be of the same mind toward one another. Mind not high things, but condescend to men of low estate. Be not wise in your own conceits. You have three sentences, by the way, in that one verse. Three complete sentences. And my understanding is you've got a shift right there again. Because now you're no longer talking about the same thing that verses 13, 14, and 15 were talking about. Because you've gone back to a context. Even though you're dealing with people, what's the difference between the context of verse 16 and 13, 14, and 15? Yeah, but what was, it's you, there's a lot of, yeah, but there are some others. Notice he says the same mind, one toward another. But are you dealing with lost people anymore? They're not anywhere in that verse. That's only saints once again. And in fact, that is very similar to that. There's some similarities to that. And what this doctrine is doing is coming back full circle. But it's not just simply restating what this is, because it's not the same. But it's similar. All right. My understanding is that when you read verse 16, there is a shift that once again, and it's the final one that takes place, that's different from verses 13, 14, 15. You ever play that game, What's Different? Well, that's helpful in this case. But whereas in verses 13 through 15, you're talking about saints and the lost, but now we've gone back to dealing with only other saints, not to mention that you've come back to something that has been brought up previous to this in verses 3 through 8. So my understanding is in view of the grammar issue, let's just recap the three helpful things that make the distinction here. In view of the grammar issue, you have three sentences in verses 13, 14, and 15. Actually, you've got the end of one, but you've got three periods here. You've got a sentence here, you've got one here, and you've got one here. And we're looking, in view of the technical issue, we're looking, so to speak, and by the way, not only do you have three sentences here, but then you've got three more that occur from here on down. So you've got, if you just broke them up into 3-3, you've got a break at between verses 15 and 16. But let's compound that with the fact that the technical issue of God, the edifying being going on in each and every packet of doctrine of the individual components that make up the whole form of doctrine. Therefore, sentence number one of verse 13, distributing the necessity of saints given to hospitality, there's your godly thinking. Sentence number 2 of verse 14, bless them which persecute you, bless and curse not, is dealing with the godly living and conduct and behavior. And then rejoice with them that do rejoice and weep with them that weep is the particular kind of labor that's in connected with that. And in view of the context, so the grammar, the technical aspect, the context is dealing with both saints and lost people. But then when we hit verse 16, we go back to dealing with only saints and not lost people. So therefore, my understanding is, with all of that, is to say that the next component is verses 13, 14, and 15. And that component is designed to come along and produce godly love among both saints and lost people. And you might even have jot in your notes there, just in parentheses or something, tender-hearted. But there's some tenderness that's going to come into this, but there's some godly love that is to be dealt with in particular ways. We're not just going to be set adrift, but there's some particular elements in which we're going to be able to display godly love among both saints and lost people. And by the way, I don't know if you're thinking it's too muddled up right now because of everything, the bad job I may be doing on this, but there is a natural transition between verse 12 and verses 13, 14, and 15. If you think about living in common circumstances and situations, you're going to be among saints. You're going to be among lost people. Well, that therefore leaves only one thing and only one verse left. Our final sixth component. And going back to our text, we have nicely three sentences to it. Be of the same mind one toward one another. That's one sentence. Mind not high things, but condescend to men of low estate. There's your second sentence and second subcomponent to it. Be not wise in your own conceits. Each one previous to this, and it's going to just be this way from this is we're leaving home for good. This is the way it's going to be from now on. It's going to follow that pattern for godly edifying to take place. So within the packet of each packet of the form of doctrine. Doctrine, we've shifted for the last time. It's bringing us back full circle, if you will, to where we began in verses 3 through 8. But now there are some other things that get added to this, added features or added elements, rather, to the godly love being selfless and kind that's going to kind of cap off our initial basic effectual working of godly love as our instruction of wisdom. And really, this last component takes... I love this last one because it's going to take every bit of what we've just learned. It'll take everything that you've had now instilled in you from verse 3 through verse 15 to bear on that one issue. It may not seem like it right now, but when we deal with it in detail, you'll see that you're going to have all of that in order to do that. And it's going to take every element you've learned about godly love, and now we're going to get instructed on how to exercise that godly love with all of its characteristics and features and sub-features. And now all those things can be incorporated into particular situations whereby due to how you've already been taught by the course of this ungodly world, the way this is rooting out that last vestige of the world's ungodly love and how it was produced in you, fundamentally, it's going to root that out to where, due to how you've already been made to think and made to feel and made to respond and made to react and so forth and so on by the ungodliness of this world. In fact, if you really analyze the love that this world is supposed to have produced in you, it is paper thin. And it just takes a second for that to turn from love into backbiting. And to turn from love into hatred and into sharpness and into a lot of other things. It is extremely shallow. That's not what this is. And therefore, your nature, by nature, is to just naturally come along and handle some saints in particular situations in a completely ungodly way and in an ungodly manner because you don't and you won't condescend to them. And that is a major problem. And there should be some synapses firing when we go through this as well. When you look at the example of our Lord Jesus Christ, what he did, and even some of the ways in Israel's program and Israel's scriptures where he's described, and even when Paul describes him later on in level 2, he's going to touch on this issue. What if Jesus Christ had never condescended to men of low estate? You'd be dead. That's where you'd be. Oh, you may be physically alive, but you'd just be in a cell, as it were, on this earth, sentenced to death and awaiting your execution. That's where you'd be. And this final component's going to instruct you on how to think, live, and labor with some saints of low estate. Now, that doesn't mean that they're poor. This isn't class structure. These are saints of low estate, which even though you may not be able to completely get a grip on what that all means right now, it tells you that there are those saints that you're going to be dealing with that may lack. That's what you've got when they do not have a high estate compared to you. Whatever the estate is talking about, whether it's money or whether it's anything else, they're low, you're high. And as I said, this isn't talking about money. It's talking about something. There's another commodity that you have that some saints that you deal with aren't going to have at the same level you've got it. And therefore, you should at least understand that much, that there's saints you're going to deal with that lack, and you'd be right in assuming that they may lack the understanding that you have. Or maybe they don't learn as quickly as you learn. Or maybe there's real feeble-mindedness. There's a real physical problem that they don't learn at the rate you learn. Or one of those weaker brothers that we'll talk about when we get out there into later chapters of Romans and talk about our godly equity and equitable decision making. But the truth of the matter is, right here and right now, kind of putting it in a nutshell, verse 16 is taking what verses 3 through 8 taught you, and it's an advanced issue of how to deal with each other in difficult circumstances. And boy, do we ever need that. How to deal with each other in difficult circumstances. And it's going to take work on your part. Some of you more than others. And I'm talking about myself. And effort on your part to deal with them. This is another one of those areas that you may be, ooh, I'm not sure I want to do that. That would have been great. I can see Jesus Christ looking through the quarters of time and saying, when your name came up, ooh, I'm not sure I really want to go to that cross now. You're laughing because that belies how ridiculous that is to you. And yet, this is what goes on among the body of Christ like crazy. By the way, that's what goes on in that creature right now. Those birds up there would not think about condescending to another of low estate any more than they'd think about ever wanting to give up the throne in which their butt sits. But that's not body thinking. I can guarantee you right now, you may have a piece of your body that, by all description, is a low estate part of your body. But when it becomes infected or it becomes hurting or it becomes a problem, you'll condescend to it. You may have a stinky foot, but I guarantee you, you'll wash it sometime or another. Well, I'm being nice, but no, I'm not. I'm being gentle in the way I'm going about this. But this is an advanced issue on how to deal with one another in difficult circumstances. And it is going to, there's a godly viewpoint you have to have in order to properly deal with a son as a son when they are in a position of being of low estate, and to deal properly with them. And it's going to take, by the way, that's the reason why it comes last. It's going to take everything you learned about godly love being selfless, about godly love being kindness, and all the tender-heartedness that's produced by it. And it's going to take every ounce of that in order to deal with them properly and to deal with them in a godly manner. And if you don't get those first five components, folks, this is where, again, I should never have to once again talk to you about getting to class or not. Those days should be over. But you miss a component here, you're not going to be able to do that. It's just not going to happen. It's the way this is all built. You don't get one or some of those five components before it effectually working in your inner man, the sixth component has no chance of working. So therefore, the instruction of wisdom completes a circle whereby you come back to some advanced issues on how to deal wisely with each other, but do it in a very particular and difficult circumstance where it's naturally difficult. It's not man-made or but it's a natural difficulty by virtue of having to deal with a bunch of people. And the doctrine of our instruction of wisdom begins with how you are to think about yourself, properly viewing others and yourself as a body, members of the church, the body of Christ, to whom God has dealt to every man the measure of faith, as it says there. And it ends with not minding high things, just like not thinking too highly of yourself, but there's going to be members in the assembly that are of low estate and of lower estate than you, whether it's because they've received the education much more difficultly than you did. Difficultly, I don't even know if that's a word, but they didn't receive it as readily, or whether they've got natural deficiencies in their intelligence or whatever. And by the way, there's a lot of natural intelligent deficiencies that has nothing to do with a person's ability to learn. They can still learn. There's been some magnificent work to prove that even in some what would be considered severe cases of mental retardation, a person could acknowledge their own need of a Savior and respond to the saving knowledge of the gospel. Well, it could be that, but it could be something far less severe than that. And I'm just going to say it this way for now, or whatever. But that's something you're going to encounter. It's just a natural process of being with people and not everybody learning at the same rate. And here in verse 16, you're taught the godly way to think. Be of the same mind one toward another. The godly way to, that's your thinking in this final component. The thinking is be of the same mind. That's easy. That's the thinking, one toward another. And then you get immediately the godly way to conduct and behave in that situation. Mind not high things, but condescend to men of low estate. And that's not just all men. That's saints. One toward another, matches up, one toward another, those of the body. And then the way you labor with your father for the benefit of that individual, be not wise in your own conceits. That's you actually condescending to that person of low estate. And the way you go about dealing with him and putting that godly love on display is that you're not going to be wise, you're not going to be conceited with them and come off as though you're high and mighty, and they're not. They're part of the same body. You're not going to come along and marginalize that individual conceitedly or prefer rather not to even deal with them at all. And the reason it comes last, though, again, just to underscore that, is that the instruction of verse 16 is based upon everything else that has occurred prior to that, and it all has to be in place in your inner man in order to properly think and do the living and the labor in connection with these individuals and being in that particular kind of circumstance with them. So therefore, just to finish up tonight, I did get it in. I put my head down and plowed through. My understanding is the final and sixth component of the receiving of our instruction of wisdom is godly love among others, especially saints there. I didn't put that on the board, but who are in difficult circumstances. God, I could have, maybe should have put godly love in our dealings with other saints of low estate. But it's godly love among others in difficult circumstances. And more particular, saints of low estate. But that's the way you perceive them. They're having a difficult time. And since they're a part of my body, I don't want them to struggle. And I can do something about it. And I will do something about it. All right. That brings us to the end of this session. Got the basic general outline. I'm kind of glad to be here. Of the very first form of our sonship education, the reception of wisdom, receiving the instruction of wisdom. There's your basic form to it, or basic outline to the form of it. I said it wasn't a social status, as though they're poor. Yeah. You're seeing them within the body, and you're seeing them because of whatever reason struggling. And their estate in their sonship life is lower than yours, and because of their struggle with it, whether it's physically induced or any other reason, You're to have some. I know these are terms that you may cringe at, but I'm saying it in a godly way. You're to have some sensitivity toward that, just as you would within your own body. Because again, the great thing about all this, we're not just learning to be good to go on Oprah. We're learning to go into the heavenly places. What? Sure, yeah, yep.
So you can be not very godly with people who are not very godly. Who don't know what
you're Are you trying to get an out for something?
Yes.
Well, sure. You know that. You know, Now, wait a minute. You're never to be, let me make sure we're clear on this, because you're never to be ungodly with somebody, no matter what. You can even ignore in a godly way. Now, let me finish what I'm going to say. Now, wait a minute. Let me finish what I'm going to say, but it did just dawn on me that you weren't here, I don't think. Were you two here when we went over Romans 3? Okay. You already know, sitting back in Romans 3, that when it comes to dealing with a self-opposer who's an unbeliever, and you're giving them the gospel, and you've made things as clear as possible, you've gone right down the information the way God lays it out, and they still reject that, and you've been told to listen for something coming out of their mouth, and when it does, you're supposed to cut your ambassadorship off to them, and you're supposed to make a pronouncement that's just as ugly and just as harsh sounding as what Paul said in Romans 3. Okay then, your damnation is just, and walk away. That is not maybe so much loving, but that's a godly response. All right, you see what I'm after? That's godly. But you have to have the skill to know when to do that and who to do that with. And that alone tells you that this is not teaching you how to deal with everybody across the board. I said this is people in the circumstances that you're taught about them here. There is a time and a place to do something just like that. Now, with a self-opposing saint, a believer who maybe you're giving them information about, they're a believer, but they're rejecting right division. They're rejecting some very clear teaching in God's Word or something like that. You never do that with a saint. You never, when they will self-oppose, and over in the pastoral epistles, Paul talks about it, uses the exact expression, when they oppose themselves. But the way the pastor, the way the bishop of the local assembly is to go about dealing with them is not to come along and say, your damnation is just. He's to deal with them gently. There's a whole different manner in which you approach them. What I'm trying to tell you is, the answer to your question is, you can have some seemingly very rude behavior to somebody, but it can still be godly as long as it falls within the parameters of what your father has taught you in what that person needs to hear or the manner in which they need to be dealt with. But right here, the manner is trying to get you to think in terms of what this assembly is and what we are together as saints. We're a body. And godly love has to exist in that body because it's going to be translated from this earth into the heavenly places to do its job. So don't, again, trying to, you know, it's kind of like Keith used to say to me all the time when I would, he'd give me homework to do and then I'd explain it for 45 minutes to him what I found. He'd ask me one question, well, what did you find? I'd go on for 45 minutes. And my thinking has gone on to so many areas. He used this expression to me 100 times if he used it once. He goes, well, that's good, but we now need to corral your thinking. Bring it all back to what's central to the context. So that's the only thing I think you need to be careful about, is keeping things within their context. Because even our Father is going to deal with people in a very severe way. God isn't going to come along in the tribulation and say, well, I love you, you're just in. No, he's going to destroy those people. And that may sound harsh, but it wouldn't sound harsh if you've been tracking and perceiving what you're supposed to perceive about the policy of evil, what the adversary is up to. By the way, we're going to get a whole big dose of that coming up before we even get out of chapter 13. Yeah, there's parameters that are going to be placed on this. How to deal with every man according to the measure of faith. Yeah. There's guidelines that will help you to corral where this is supposed to go. Exactly. Exactly. Yep. Yeah, don't think that when you walk out tonight that you've got this. Because we haven't even started with the details of it. But we will on Sunday. Just one lesson, though, because the thing. All right. All right. Anybody else? Okay. I'm hungry. I'm going home. All right. Let's bow for a word of prayer.